Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. It's Laura Mize, pediatric speech-language pathologist, and I'd like to welcome you to tonight's show. It's Thursday, January 15th, 2009, and if you're listening now, you're listening live. Kate, you're here.
I'm here, and I'm going to go ahead and say I'm Kate Hensler, a developmental interventionist with the First Steps program, because usually I just am so excited that I'm here. Like, I'm here! So I don't say who I am. So now I've said
your credentials.
I was early tonight, yes. Yes. I'm just not a total random person, but anyway.
That's funny. You do actually know what you're doing. You're not just Kate, are you?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, tonight we're going to continue the show that we started last week on toys. And again, it's mine and Kate's very favorite topic to talk about. This is what we talk about daily between our visits when we call each other. We are always talking about toys. And tonight we're going to start where we left off last week. This is from the article on my website, teachmetotalk.com, called Recommended Toys and Techniques for Targeting Language in Toddlers. And it's in the category. If you'll look on the homepage of the website, there's a little category bar across the top, and it's in the category called Great Toys. And last week we talked about movement, toys, and games, and we got a great comment from the website from a podcast listener named Kathy. And she commented about how much she liked the game Elephone that apparently you and I just went on and on about last week. And she even gave a link for being able to make your own, or instructions to make your own butterflies, which I thought was great. I haven't looked at that yet, but I'm running low on some of those butterflies too. So I'm going to look at that link. And thanks so much to Kathy for her feedback. We love to hear from our listeners, and if you don't listen live, which most of the people that listen to our show probably don't listen live according to the data that we get back from Blog Talk Radio, but we love your comments on the website and keep those coming because that makes us actually feel like, hey, somebody's there, even though we know it, it's just more personal than a number.
And even though this seems like obvious information to us, we know that from working with kids all day, every day, a lot of parents don't necessarily know how to use a toy to try and get your child to talk. And understand, Laura and I both work with kids who are language delayed, so our emphasis is always get them to talk.
Right.
Or understand what you're saying. But parents may know how to play with the toy, but they don't necessarily know how to do that. And Laura's information gives exact words that she uses with certain toys. And so it's very helpful for anybody working with kids who are late talkers and trying to get them to talk a little sooner.
And just ideas, again, for parents to use at home. You know, I had a visit today that I want to talk about. I adore this mom. She's a pediatric physical therapist, but she's not working right now because they've adopted two children from Korea. So she's taking a little break in her professional life. And she worked with kids forever before, and that's what she's going to go back to. But she said, you know, as a mom, I know I do not play with my kids enough. I teach them all day, I talk to them all day, but I do not play enough. And I think that's what lots of us as moms say at the end of the day. Well, I got the dishes done and the laundry done, and I did carpool in the morning and the afternoon, and I went to Kroger, and I went to Walmart. And there's not much play time in between all those hustle and bustle activities that we have to get done. But play is so important. And it's something that we really almost need to pencil in on our calendars every single day, especially for a child who's language delayed, because they are not, just by nature of what's going on with them developmentally, not picking up language the regular way. If they were, wouldn't have the problem. So you have to carve out these real specific times that you're really going to think about it in play. And this kind of leads me to our conversation today, Kate, that we had, and making sure that you're really focused on language during all those daily routines, like bath time and snack time and cleaning up the toy room time and all those things. And in a couple of weeks after we finish this series on toys, that's what we're going to spend a few weeks talking about, is how to interject language learning into every daily routine that we can think of in the schedule of a parent with a child. So that's going to come up in a couple of weeks, and I wanted to go ahead and talk about that and kind of plug those, because I think those are going to be great shows as well for giving parents concrete ideas for during bath time. These are the kinds of toys that would be good. This is what we would say. This is how we would work on that. So some really good functional ideas for you to be able to take. But this week we're talking about toys and play and how to get language during playtime. So we will keep chugging along on this article. We are to the section on cause and effect toys. And Kate is a developmental interventionist who focuses on cognition. Do you want to talk about cause and effect and what that means and why that milestone is important?
Do I want to, or will I give it my... No, okay. What it means. I mean, I guess initially I like the simplest of cause and effect toys, and that is just they just kind of have to do one thing to make something else happen. And generally those tend to be things that include not necessarily all the things we like, but they may have music, they may have lights, they may have the ball drops out of the hole, or, you know, some very relatively obvious thing. They push a button and it pops out, or, you know, just one simple. And it kind of gets at the root of kids have some awareness that if they do something, something happens, or they get something. And most kids, I think you say about a year, I think that's accurate, sometimes a little earlier, and I'd be a little concerned if it was much later than a year that, you know, if they have some action on a toy, that they're going to get some result. So,
right, and I think, again, you know, and we've talked about this before too, so many of our developmental checklists really aren't, when typical kids master that, it's well before that range.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with all the language milestones, you know, they'll say by 24 months a kid should have 50 words and be doing two-word phrases. Well, then I'll see that, you know, I visit these boards, or moms will send me these links to these parent boards, and I'll go to them, and they'll interpret that as the typically developing child only has 50 words and is just beginning to do two-word phrases. And I think, no, that's the minimum. And that's what this milestone is as well. Children absolutely should be able to operate and understand cause and effect toys by the 12-month level. And I do think in my own children and children that I see who are moving along developmentally, it comes way early. I'm talking 6 to 9 months. Don't you think
right.
that's more
yeah.
accurate? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So my favorite cause and effect toys, you can find this again in the article called Recommended Toys and Techniques for Targeting Language, and it's at teachmetotalk.com. One of my very favorite ones is that spiral racetrack by Fisher-Price that goes rim, rim, rim. And it sounds like it's a race car, but you put the two little race cars at the top. You push one little lever that is so easy to activate, and then the cars go down the swirly spirals. I love that toy, use that toy all the time, and it really does appeal to a wide variety of kids. It is simple to operate, and again, I think it's a winner. They have a newer version that goes along with the movie Cars, where you have Lightning McQueen, and I don't know what the other one is. Do you have that toy, Kate? Do you have that version?
I have the old lady version, just
yeah.
original Cars, although I do like that, and I've looked at it, but it's really the same. It's just they've updated the vehicles. And there's also one with chickens. I don't love that one.
I don't like the chicken one.
Ah,
a couple of years
silly.
Ago. Yeah, a couple years ago, that one was popular at Christmas. And I had parents that, you know, would say, oh, I have something like that. And because you have cars, I bought the ones with chickens. And kids would play with it, but not as long as they would those cars. I wonder if the newer version, though, has an on-off button. Because that's my one beef about that toy.
It is obnoxious. It goes
yeah.
off all the time.
And driving in the car.
I don't know, because my version is older, but that would be worth the $20 to buy
yeah.
the toy again if it had an on-off switch.
I know. I would, too. I would pay $20 for an on-off switch on that toy. And I've tried it. And that one, you can't really take the batteries out as easily as some of the other toys either. And we have a little friend whose mom has... this little girl has some pretty severe motor challenges, and so she couldn't always get to put the cars in by herself with the little top on the racetrack. And her mom is so great and took the top off and the handle so that her little girl could actually get the cars, well, try to get the cars back in the little entryways at the top. But for a kid with motor challenges, it's just hard enough to try to make them want to keep doing it. So I even like to use it with kids who are lower functioning motor-wise because they do have to work a little bit to get it back in there.
Yeah, it's kind of hard. Not super hard, but can be a bit of a challenge. Or they kind of cheat and try and stick it in the middle of the track or something.
Yeah.
Oh, no,
I have to let them do. I do up, 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 here, here. It goes here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't let them get with that. I guess that, you know, Laura, as you were talking about toys and everything, in thinking about the show, I thought, you know, I think sometimes parents really like toys that engage their kids in play by themselves for a really long time.
Right.
That's
yeah.
the way a lot of parents use toys. And I certainly recognize, as a parent of old kids, but when my kids were young, I certainly appreciated a toy that entertained my child for, you know, longer than 2 minutes. And I thought that was great. But as therapists, we really like toys that not only engage the child, but also kind of encourage the kids to want us to play along with them, you know,
right.
that we're kind of part of the whole play process. And so things that aren't so, that are challenging and interesting, but not necessarily super easy.
Right.
That's why those bells and whistles toys where you push and it bleeps or it flashes, we don't like, because they can just go in the corner and tap, tap, tap. We like things where they kind of need us a little bit.
Right. Absolutely. And you know what I do with that, if I have a kid who's super visual but that won't look at me with those cars going down the racetrack, don't you get on the other side of the racetrack and look up at them, you know, through the...
Absolutely.
Through the little things. And then that, you know, again, you've added a visual component, which is what some of those kids who are on the spectrum really thrive on. And then they're looking for you behind there. You know, then you start to do peekaboo. You know, you're going up and down from behind that racetrack. And, again, they can see part of your face through there. And for those kids who really like that visual stuff, you know, that's another way that I've kind of hooked some kids who wouldn't normally want to stay with me and even let me participate in that kind of play with them.
Right. And you turn kind of an isolated toy that one child might be able to go and do by himself for 30 minutes into something really pretty social. And that, I think those are the things that you are the master of that parents don't necessarily, I mean, that's not necessarily, you know, if you read the instructions for that racetrack toy, it would not tell you, hide behind it.
Right.
Look through the track and make silly faces and then
yeah.
peek out.
Fisher-Price doesn't really recognize all the super toys that we see. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's why we tend to like the toys we like, because, one, kids like them, but also they lend themselves to being part of the process. And if you become part of the process, you're much more likely to get the child to communicate with you than if they're off doing their own thing.
Right. And I do like this toy, too, because, and I know you do this, too, Kate, is it's something that I don't necessarily let them do until they say a word or, you know, if I have a kid who really can't say go, if we're signing it. You know, we might do the sign for go. And I love your version of the sign for go, doing your arms around. You know, you put your arms in front of your body and roll them around in a circle, kind of like the wheels on the bus motion, except, you know, you would go really fast and say, go!
Mm-hmm.
That's an easier way to do it than the ASL version, which is kind of pointing two fingers to the side. But, you know, you don't let them push the lever to let the cars go until they've said go or signed go, or even, you know, I've had kids before say, you know, how does the car go? You've got to say it too. Tell me. Rum, rum, rum. You know, if they can do that car sound, that might be a way to get them to use a vocalization in response to me requesting it and not just kind of on their own. So, again, you want them to play with you, but you want to work that language in. And if you've got a toy that they really love, there's no better way to kind of withhold it a little bit. And again, I'm not meaning withhold by you standing up towering over them, you know, with your 5.5 feet saying, you have to tell me, car, we're not going to play. I mean, when you're sitting down right across from them.
Hey, that sounded like an imitation I might do.
You're rubbing off on me.
Tell me now or you don't get it. Yeah, if you want examples of how to do that in a playful way that really does encourage a child to talk, check out Laura's website and check out her DVDs, because she does that so much through those DVDs, and you'll see it. And there's so much difference in making it playful and fun and animated and goofy. And the kids kind of quickly learn, it's that game, as opposed to tell me car, say go. You know, it becomes a power struggle with a two-year-old. And that, we all know, is the hard thing to win. But if it's a game and it's fun and it's playful with a two-year-old, you'll have a lot more success.
Right. And so you want to sit there with twinkly eyes, and after you've done it a time or two, then pop your hand up in front of that lever and say, what do we say? Ready, set, and then wait for them to pop out, go, or help them, you know, physically show them how to do the sign and then help them perform the sign too. So that's what we're talking about by withholding. And again, I'm going to say it, I feel like a broken record. Research tells us that withholding really is only valuable 3 times, 4 times, 5 times. There's no educational point beyond withholding or prompting a word or a sign beyond that 5th time. Then it's overkill. The child isn't learning anything. That was a big study done by the National Institutes for Health, and I always forget the year, but they spent $1 bazillion on that study that could, you know, we could have probably told you that in, about 2 minutes, that after three, four, five times that you're really prompting a word, if a kid is not responding, give it to them anyway. Move on. Don't lose the interaction just because you think that you're going to hold out and get the word. And I never use withholding if I've never heard the kids say the word in imitation of me or just kind of on their own, because, again, it's too hard for them at that point. They're probably not going to pop it out under pressure if you've never seen it when they've imitated it in a more fun or less structured way. Do you agree with that, Kate?
Generally, yes, I do. You know, there are a few exceptions, I'd say, but generally, if you haven't heard it, you're probably not going to, which is one of the things I like about the signs, is that you really can, again, not in a real forceful way, but in a playful way. If you're saying a sign and go and your child isn't, and you pick up his hands and you roll him around real fast and you say, go, you can really kind of quote-unquote make a child sign, but you really cannot quote-unquote make a child talk.
You really can't. You really can't. And for some children who have motor planning challenges, that direct pressure of say it or else absolutely guarantees they are not going to be able to say it in that situation. And that's like, you know, I'll go in, you know, to evaluate a child, and a parent will say, well, Grandma says he's just stubborn, and she told my husband that, and so now last night my husband had his milk, and he said he's not going to give it to him until he says milk. And I'll say, what happened? And she'll say, well, he cried for 30 minutes, but my husband wouldn't give in and said that we just couldn't give it to him unless he said it. And I'll just sit there and say, okay, has he ever said milk before? Has he ever even gotten close to saying milk? Do you think he can say milk? And the mom will, you know, say no. And I just think, gosh, under that pressure situation, you're probably not going to hear that word for the first time. And there are some situations where I can see that a parent would really try that, or even as a therapist, I might try it. But, again, it's not going to be a do-or-die thing. I would never make a kid go 30 minutes crying, screaming on the floor for milk. Never, ever, ever.
That is cruel. And occasionally I've heard a therapist tell parents
that
they need to withhold it until he says it.
Yeah, just don't give it to him. And I think, oh, my gosh, you are setting that situation up for failure, because then a kid doesn't want to be with you, and they have to want to be with you to want to learn from you, and that's just, again, setting that whole situation up for failure. But this isn't really even what we're talking about tonight, is it?
We're jumping
on to toys.
Jumping on to our next one. Okay, let's go to our second. What did you put first? You had the car track, which is a really good one.
Oh, it's the Jack in the Box toys. And my very favorite one is Peeks the Clown, an old Discovery Toys toy, and it's a red box, and again, it's on, I think it's probably on Teach Me to Talk, that DVD, and on Teach Me to Listen and Obey 1, because it's such an easy toy, and I always use it with my youngest little friends. But it's a red little box, and the only, you don't have to turn a knob to activate this Jack in the Box, you just have to push the big yellow button that's right there. And it's a winner. I think you went and bought that one, didn't you, Kate?
I did, but I have to say, a cautionary note, it is not easy to find Peeks the Clown. you have to be absolutely as obsessed with toys as I am. I ended up buying it on eBay. It is hard to find because I think it's been some number of years since. Hey, Discovery Toys folks, make Peeks the Clown again. Or
yeah,
put a different character in there.
Yeah.
Puppy the Peeper or something, because it's great. It's just, it's really hard to find.
It is. But you can find other Jack-in-the-Box toys, but again, I don't like that one. I think, like, I was looking at one Johnny and I ate at Cracker Barrel last Saturday morning, and I was looking at their, you know, they have some cool older toys there, and I was looking at the Sock Monkey Jack-in-the-Box, and I think the Sock Monkey's so cute. Our daughter's a little bit obsessed with that.
Uh-huh.
But I was looking at that one, but it, the song goes on forever, the Pop Goes the Weasel song, and I know our little friends would give up before they got to the pop on there, or not care, you know, by after the, you crank it for 10 minutes, you think, that's all I get, you know, what happened? You know, it's just not rewarding enough, and so the reason I like the Peeks the Clown is because one pop and it's up,
mm-hmm.
and that little clown comes out of that box, too, and I've done a ton of preposition work or location word work with that, you know, put it in, take it out, put it on top, it goes under, you know, look, it popped up, it's push it down. You know, you can even do some concept work with kids that are a little, maybe even a little older for that, but you can make it more fun and get more language miles out of it that way.
We date ourselves with some of our toys, Laura, because they're out of commission. But maybe some toy people will be listening and jump on the bandwagon.
Yeah, and if there are some toy people listening, you got to call Kate and me because, boy, have we got an idea for you with this great toy all thought up. We just need a manufacturer and a producer or whatever. So, anyway, have any contacts in the toy industry, call us because we've got a winner. Okay. The next thing that I talk about under the cause and effect toy section is are the Pop and Pal toys. And, again, I like some of those Pop and Pal toys. Some of them are hard, though. Don't you think they're hard for even some older toddlers?
To be honest, I haven't used them. I still probably do in the garage that's full of discarded toys. But, because I've had too many kids, it's just too hard. They can do, like, the one little button thing.
The lever. They can do the one that looks like a light switch, you know, or the pull lever. But the round telephone.
No, that little telephone dial, no way.
That's hard.
Uh-huh.
You know, there are other ones that are just the little, you just push it and it happens. But there, some of those are, if you have a kid who kind of likes that thing and motor-wise they're pretty coordinated, they're just a little bit slower with language, that might be a good one for them. I don't use that all the time anymore. But that's the kind of toy that would be considered a cause and effect toy. Fisher-Price has some newer ones, too, like the turtle one that our friend has this, Kate. The little turtle that the shell is open in the back and it has balls, and you push the turtles, you put the balls in, and then you push the turtle's head and the balls spin.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a cool one. Little gumball machine toys. We're going to talk about this in a minute under balls. I love that. Tommy, however you pronounce that toy company name, that you put the, it looks like a gumball machine. And again, is that one even sold new anymore?
You know.
Can't you just buy that one online?
I think you can buy it online, but I think Tommy, if that's how you say it, Tommy, is a British company, and everything seems to be sold in England, and they're very, you know, by the time you pay the exchange rate and then shipping, that is one expensive ball toy. I don't know. I think that they used to be sold here because I actually see those every so often in, you know, secondhand stores or Goodwills or whatever.
And I bought mine at that consignment sale.
Right.
Yeah, that we went to a couple years ago.
I think they must
together.
Be in less distribution all those times. You can still get some Tommy toys here, but
right.
And I like the Tommy version really better than the Fisher-Price version. It's cute, the Fisher-Price, but
I like the Tommy version better, too.
They seem to like those balls better. So I don't know what it is, but for some reason it's a little better.
It is, and you put the ball in the top, and then it's got a lever that you pull down. I think it's pretty cool. I have parents that joke all the time about that I'm getting their kids ready for the slot machines or for the casinos, and I kind of roll my eyes and keep going. But that's a good kind of cause and effect toy. that kids really like, and it's one that kids get and want to keep on playing and playing and playing. A lot of times I have to put that up before kids are even finished with that.
Right.
And again, these are for kids that are not doing pretend play or anything more advanced. We're talking about kids that are functioning at about the 12 to 18 month level, if not even sometimes a little bit lower. So again, if you have a 3-year-old, don't go out and buy these toys. We're talking about for kids who developmentally are kind of functioning at that 12 to 15 to 18 month level.
Yeah, or maybe a little older, but have such a significant language delay that, you know, that's where their language is. Because I have had some older kids who were definitely higher functioning who still love that, and then that other ball toy that you introduced me to, Lauren. I know you talk about it in the ball section, too.
Yeah. Well, and I think ball toys would be the exception in this category because I'll even have older siblings,
right.
You're right, that want to play with the ball toys. And I think balls are just so universally fun for kids that, you're right, that would appeal. But again, if you're listening to this show and you're saying, okay, my kid's almost 3, I'm going to go buy them this for their birthday.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't do that. I would pick it up for a buck or two at a consignment sale or a garage sale and maybe use it. But, again, it's not something that you're going to want to spend a lot of time to really try to find unless your child is functioning developmentally at that range or ball is about the only word they can say and you want to do everything you can to reinforce that. And that's how I use a lot of my ball toys is early on if I know a kid spontaneously can pop that out. Believe me, I am every week going in that house with a different ball toy because that's usually what I start with to kind of warm them up in the session because it's something they can say so that they get so much positive feedback and they are really internally rewarded because, you know, like, oh, I did it, I got it. And I make them, and again, I like these ball toys because you don't just have one ball with it. You have, you know, 4 or 5 balls and you can make them say it over and over and over and over to get the ball. And then they put it in and when it comes out of the slot, they never get to get the ball. I always catch it before them and say, I got it, or ooh, ball, or mine, or something, and grab it first before they can get it, and then they have to ask for it again before they get another turn.
Which, amazingly, most of the kids I see love that, you know, that you're grabbing it and making it a big deal.
I love it.
Yeah. It sounds like they wouldn't, but if you do it in a really playful way, they light up. That's as much fun as the toy, you know.
Right, and they just think it's hysterical, and I'll try to pull it with them and fight them for it, you know, again, in a playful way, and they think that is hysterical, too. And the other reason ball toys are so great, and we talked about this last week, is, you know, the old gag, hide the ball in their shirt. You know, that's another way to kind of extend the fun on that. And again, that isn't really a cause and effect thing. It's more object permanence, and that also is one of those huge cognitive milestones that we want children to achieve certainly by the time they're 12 months old. But if you have an older child who doesn't realize that, you know, you've even hidden the ball in his shirt, or that, you know, when you put a blanket over a toy that it's still there, you really need to work on that because, again, it's a huge cognitive milestone. And kids who don't get those milestones really don't learn to talk. Because, again, so much of communication and cognition, it's so closely tied together. And that's a building block. It's a foundational skill. So you do have to, if you have older children who aren't talking that also aren't doing those other things, you need to back up and work on those earlier skills. Because, again, you have to master those before they're even really ready cognitively to move on to symbolic thinking or, you know, words are really just representations of things. You know, a glass is not really a glass. It's just the name that we all call it. So, again, until a child has mastered these very basic cognitive concepts, he's really not ready to talk yet.
Ladies, we have a caller.
Okay. Hi, caller.
Oh, hi.
Hi. Welcome to Teach Me to Talk. Do you have a question?
Well, this is Greta, Kate's daughter. First of all, I was just going to say that. But I was listening to your podcast, which I do every week, because it's just like talking to my mom on the phone. Because she talks about, you know, work and how much she likes it. But when I heard her talking about Peeps, the clown, or that toy you were talking about,
mm-hmm.
it actually made me think. I was treasure hunting at the Goodwill yesterday, and don't laugh.
Okay, move it along now.
And I met a grandmother who was there with her grandson, who, to my untrained eye, had developmental delays,
mm-hmm.
and she was talking about how he doesn't like any of the toys that she gets him, and it made me think of maybe suggesting your all's input on where parents can get good quality toys that aren't going to break their budget.
Goodwill. Goodwill's a good place to start.
Yeah.
You find a lot of stuff there, don't you, Kate?
I do. Sometimes I do Once Upon a Child, but they're a little higher. Any kind of secondhand kids consignment stores typically have them. And, hey, I'm all about buying them secondhand because all you do is wipe them up, and generally they're as good as new.
Well,
yeah.
And for our use, we play with them so much anyway that they look old, even when they're new, because
you know,
we have 5 or 6 kids in the course of a day, you know, play with those. So yeah, I think that's a good idea. Thank you for that point, Greta.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, if it's family night, maybe my mother can call in.
But yes, we need a Peggy call from a grandmother's perspective, perhaps. She's our number one listener.
Yeah, she and Greta. Thank you very much.
Okay, we didn't really specifically talk about that parents' ball toy, and to me, that is probably the best. The most universally, I like the gumball ones, but not like I like the ball, like a tower, and the parents' version, which is the Target brand, or at least that's, I don't know if it's specifically Target, but they sell them at Target.
Well, I've never seen the parents' toys anywhere other than Target, have you?
Well, you know, they have them in catalogs and stuff.
Oh, okay.
They do sell them. That's the only store I've ever seen them in, but I have seen them even in therapy catalogs. Sometimes parents' brand things are sold.
Mm-hmm.
But your best bet is the Target. Should you be lucky enough to have a Target nearby, it's kind of a tower. It has 4 holes on the top. The holes have colors, and the balls are color-coordinated with the holes. Then there's kind of an internal ramp. And one thing I like about the parents' toy is that the back of it has a reflective surface, so it acts kind of as a mirror.
Yeah.
And there's a little wheel inside. So, you know, there's some whirling and rampy stuff going on inside, and then it comes out to shoot at the bottom. And, boy, even older kids who are really beyond that toy love that toy. And that's when you're talking.
And that's one that siblings take away from, you know,
mm-hmm.
that I'll give if there's a 3 or 4 or 5-year-old home that really wants to play, but I'm not able to kind of hook them in and they're not performing like I need them to perform to make their brother or sister talk more. I will often send them away with that toy,
mm-hmm.
and they will stay away and play with that 10 or 15 minutes by themselves. So it is a great one. It is one I never take out of my car. I always have that one.
Me too.
Available, yeah.
No
yeah,
batteries, like, can't break it,
yeah.
Comes with a hammer. And you pointed out on your website, Laura, it squeaks, the little hammer squeaks on
yeah.
one side as you depress it. It's just, you know, I'd say if I had one suggestion on a toy, that would be it, because
yeah.
everybody seems to love it. Girls, boys, older kids. So
it's a keeper, and I do body parts with that hammer all the time. I'll say, hit Laura's knee or hit Laura's hand. And, oh, my gosh, kids love that. They
now,
love...
I don't do that. How did that little trick escape me? I'd be afraid they'd whop me in the head with it.
Well, I use it with caution. I wouldn't say it
yeah.
to all of our friends. Some of them, or if we're working even on clothing items, you know, because that's one of the preschool language skill for you know, little developmental things. And I bet that's on your test, too. You know, understands clothing items. I'll say, you know, hammer Laura's shoe, hammer Laura's sock, hammer Laura's shirt, and kids totally get into that. And that's the way that you can get them to perform that, too, if they're not a performer. Do you know what I mean? You'll have kids that you need to reassess, or even in an eval, I might use that for kids who you know, if I'm not really going to take a parent's report, or if they're, again, not a kid who does all those point to body parts or point to clothing items on request, I might try to do it that way. And I've gotten kids to do that before that, you know, again, don't necessarily always want to follow those verbal
requests. Yeah, it does seem like kids when, let's say this, typically developing kids go through a phase where they like that. Where's your eye? Where's your nose? Where's your ear? And they point, and they might point to mommies or whatever. And then they kind of get over it. And then even if they know it, they're looking at you like, I'm not pointing to my ear. My thing on that one, I'm going to use that hammer from henceforth, however. I'm definitely putting it in that in my little bag of tricks. But I do it with bubbles, too. Like, you know, pop it on your, or I'm going to pop it in your ear. Where's your ear? And if they think I'm going to pop it, they'll point to their ear or reach for their ear.
Yeah.
But if I'm just saying, where's your ear? No, that's.
Yeah, I hardly ever get it that way.
Mm-mm.
It has to always kind of be in the context of something else. On Teach Me to Listen and Obey 1, our little Abby is doing Where's Your Belly? And her mom does this with her too, but, you know, she puts her on the back, her back, and she, you know, it's not just pointing to her belly. You know, we tickle, tickle, tickle every time, you know, she pats her little belly like that. And that's something, again, that you want there to be a surprise or something that you do fun after you ask where that body part is so that they're going to want to continue that game and you get more than one or two. And you're right. I mean, even with typically developing kids, they like it for a little bit, about a month or two, and then they are so over that trick, even if they know what that is. So that's another way to kind of elicit those. We've already talked about the other ball toys that we liked. Let's talk about blocks. My very favorite blocks, Kate, are the ones that you gave me, those old.
They are not necessarily old, though. I have to put a disclaimer in on that. I think they have been around for a long time because I've had a lot of moms tell me they had them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and say the mom's 25.
But can you still order those
30.
From
Hardware
right now? Oh, you're kidding.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think, let's say this. As of maybe 5 years ago, I know Tupperware still made them. What? No, okay, I want to search it while you talk, and I'll find out. I'm pretty sure the answer is yes, they still make them. But
okay, because I had them with Jonathan, who's 19. We had some, and then I had some very early on in my career, and I lost them or gave them away or something. And then you gave me some that you found, what, a year or two ago?
Yeah, I think I bought a set new, and then I had a bunch. You get a ton of them.
Do you really? I may go ahead and buy another set. But they open. It's not just a set of blocks. They're plastic, and you open them, and we love them because we put little surprises in there. Usually I'll put little farm animals, and, again, I'll buy those from my favorite farm animals are from Walmart on the cheap toy aisle, and you'll buy a bag for about $2, and you can get a farm animal set and a zoo animal set and a dinosaur set, but just small enough to fit in those little blocks. And kids love to open those and see what's in there. And I'll have kids play with those for a long, long time.
Yeah, those are always, that's another one I never take out of my bag. It's a great, you know, oh, we have 10 minutes. Most kids really. I think, you know, I bought a few at a garage sale. Obviously, I go to these things because I talk about them a lot. And they came with some things in it. Now, the ones that I bought in recent years did not. And we had to, you know, like you said, you use your little farm. I use some animals. I have little baby cars that'll fit in them. I have little balls that'll fit in them. Any kind of little trinket. Of course, with kids who mouth everything, you have to be somewhat careful.
Yeah,
but
I don't use it with my, I mean, I wait until they're older and kind of over the mouthy stuff before I'll do something that small.
Yeah, and I just am really careful, you know.
Yeah.
If I know they're going to mouth it, I kind of grab it and put it back in and then get the next one. So, but yeah, you got to be careful if your kid's still sticking everything in their mouth. But they just, it's so novel. And then I will say, once they realize there's something in them, they're kind of done using them as blocks. You know,
right.
They don't necessarily stack them or anything like that. But Boy, you can sure hold their interest for a long time. With
you can. I do have some kids that will stack them because I'll say, let's stack them up, and then everybody gets to climb up and jump off. And they'll, you know, you might be able to hook them another two or three minutes with that,
mm-hmm.
with having the animals climb up to the top. That's kind of a fun thing to do. You know, at Easter time, I use Easter plastic Easter eggs in the same way. It's hide those same kind of little animals in Easter eggs. And then, you know, hide them all over the room. And instead of having candy or, you know, whatever else a mom would want to put in there, you know, we have those little animals inside there. And then that's fun to find the Easter eggs and then open them up and see what animals and stuff in there. And if you're a more traditional speech therapist, you could even put some little pictures in there. But, of course, I haven't done that in, like, about 15 years.
Yeah, forget that.
So, yeah, so, but you could, you know, or if you were working with a child that was, you know, this could be, you know, an older kid that's 3 or 4, mostly working on articulation, and you had some little pictures, but you needed a more fun way to target a particular sound, you could have your little pictures in there and have an Easter egg hunt, and again, make that activity so much more fun than just sitting down and flipping through flashcards or coloring a picture or something like that, you know, at a table, you know, but you, that would be a way to use that activity too, or use pictures in a more fun way. I do have that set of graduated stacking blocks. Sometimes those are fun too, and, you know, they're buckets that are like that. I don't use those all the time. I use them only if kids really, really like them. Last year, Mom gave me a set as a gift, just some blocks that, you know, were different sizes, and they were really durable. I still have them, but I don't use them as much. But some kids really like that, stacking them up, you know, kind of taller than they are and knocking them over. That's kind of fun. Or nesting them. And one way that I use them a lot is when kids are really working on the big little concept is to use them in that way. You know, where's the block that's big? You know, and you can always put 2 or 3 out there, and then they have to find the biggest one, and then they have to find the one that's little or smallest. And so that's kind of another way to work on that concept.
I've been looking for the Tupperware blocks. I'm not getting a good vibe on that. They might be a dinosaur, too.
I'm thinking they are. There's a Tupperware store at one of our malls in Louisville, and I went in there over Christmas, and I didn't see that. And surely they would have that in there.
If it were new. Christmas. Maybe it's been a few years. I don't know.
I'm telling you, 5 years goes by faster than it used to, huh?
Okay, Tupperware folks, we're ready for you to reissue your blocks because, you know, one thing, those blocks also kind of lock together. I don't really use them that way, but they do. They're kind of cool that way for older kids.
Oh, I didn't even know that. I'll try that tomorrow.
Yeah, you can
Monday.
Make a chain out of them because one connects to the next one. Mm-hmm.
I had no idea.
They seem kind of pricey. I don't know. You probably get 30 blocks for $20 or something. But
if you
mine,
use them over and over and over.
Yeah, and I have never had one break.
Me either. And I've had some kids really pull them and, you know, be downright abusive, and they are very durable. Okay, let's move on to shape sorters. And I say in the article, as a rule, I don't really like shape sorters because I think kids don't want to do them. And parents so misuse this toy because they're always going for words like circle, triangle, octagon, when a kid can barely say milk, ball, shoes. So again, it's more of a cognitive thing where you do want to be able to match the shape and somehow get it in, but there is one shape sorter we like, and Kate, this was the toy that you introduced me to, and it's that Parents Line shape sorter that has, there are 4 or 5 shapes on top?
At least 5, yeah.
I think they're probably 5, but I've lost my chicken, so I'm down to 4.
Oh, no.
I know. I've got to replace that. So in all of your shopping in the next week or two, if you find a cheap one of those, pick it up for me.
You mean that's a chicken? I've been calling it a duck for about 6 years now.
Oh, wow. Duck would have been a better word, but
I
thought it was
a
chicken.
I kind of think it is, but I do call it a duck because I have a lot more kids who can say ducks than chickens, though.
I know, but I almost always go, bok, 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 bok. It can get a pretty good bok, bok out of a kid, and I'm always
quack, quack, quack. He's yellow. That's one thing I would change about that toy. I would make the characters on top different and better because one of them is a koala bear, and it's like, there's a bear, there's a teddy bear, and there's a koala bear. And I always think, now that could have been 10 other things before a koala bear, maybe 20 other things. But
I know. But we tell why we like it.
Because
you have a good description of this.
Wait, I don't know what I say.
The noise, how you talk about the noise.
Oh, that is what kids, I mean, I've had kids who will really work to do this shape sorter, and normal, just drop it in and it does nothing, shape sorter, they couldn't care less. I don't know if this is noise, but what it does is they put it in, it goes, like all the way down.
It cracks me up every time you do the noise.
Well, they light up.
I
and
know.
And again, no bell, I mean, no batteries. It's some little air, you know, kind of
air
suction
thing, yeah.
And it all the way down. And they love that. And kids who really don't attend toys for, you know, really show very little limited interest in toys, I've seen sit and really want to play with that for quite a long time. And again, just like Laura does with everything else, you know, we're kind of withholding them. We're getting them to, I do not ever do, every once in a while I'll admit I'll do a star because I think a star is a little more significant than a triangle.
Right.
Because there are stars outside and there are stars in books and, you
it's
know.
It's a more functional word, yeah.
Right. I will sometimes do star and kids seem to like stars and, you know, that's not a too terribly late word. But other than that, I work on things like in and mine and more and just basic words. I really don't.
Right.
They have to be kind of way beyond that before I start saying, it's a bear, say bear. Or having him choose between two. Do you want the bear? And I do really honestly say duck, even though he does look like a chicken. But they're kind of cartoony. You know, they're not real.
Well, if you had told me how many ever years ago I got that toy that you called it a duck, I probably would have called it a duck just thinking, oh, yeah, that would have been a more logical thing to do, but I called it a chicken.
I've looked at it. I've studied it, and I do believe it's a chicken, but I just decided, and sometimes I'll say bear for both the bears, but that bugs me, that koala bear. I mean, it could have been a dog or a cat, or a cat would have been good because it kind of whines as it goes in.
I call the koala bear. I think I call it something else. I just call the purple one a bear. I don't even know what I call the green one.
Well,
that's a green one?
I believe that's correct, yes.
I call it something else. I'm going to look at that tomorrow.
And see what it is you say.
I call it something else. I don't, and I cannot think of what it is without looking at it, but I don't say bear for two of them. I have a different name for that.
Well,
so
let me know, because I always kind of go, what should I call that?
Okay, this would be exactly this kind of phone call that we have.
Yeah, what do you
every
day?
You
do? Oh, okay. Well, I've heard you talk about that hammer thing before, and I never used it, but I'm going to use that now.
The hammer trick, and I have been mixing up puzzle pieces all week. Mix from the trick last week. So,
and did they like it?
Yes, they think it's hysterical.
It's funny, isn't it? Like, it really
it
isn't
is.
Any big deal, but they do like it, so.
They like it, and it is a way to keep a kid doing a puzzle when, you know, it's the last 5 minutes and you don't want to go get a new toy out. So,
right.
Or you think you have blown through 10 toys in 15 minutes. We are going to play with something for more than 30 seconds.
Right. Or they do one piece and they start singing the cleanup song.
Yeah.
And if you just take the pieces and mix, oh, I'll go, oh, I forgot to mix. You know, as goofy and crazy as I can, and they say, oh, now that's okay, I'll do another piece.
I'll do another one.
Yeah.
I like that one, too. Okay, but remind me next week to tell you what I call the green thing, because I do not call it a bear, I call it something else, but it escapes me without looking at it. All right, the next set of toys, I just put as vocabulary building, and the reason...
Oh, I'm going to add one... Wait, sorry.
Okay,
sorry.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
One shape sorter I use, and I don't know that you have it, is a toy where it has doors, like...
Oh,
like a circus
I do.
Towel. Yeah.
I do have that, and I use it for something else, so but go ahead.
I like that, not quite as well as that parent's shape sorter, but I have to say, for boys in particular, they love those keys because you drop it in the top.
Yeah, I was going to say, describe the whole toy, because parents don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, it looks kind of like a circus tent, and it probably has six holes on the top and six colored doors, and those have holes for shapes as well. and you can either drop it in the top, and those are characters or objects. Like there's a star up there, and there's a baby carriage, and there's a, oh, help me, Laura. I should know these pretty quickly.
See, I don't know because I don't use my blocks with it. Do you know what I would do with that toy?
What?
I call it the zoo, and I put zoo animals in there, and we have to unlock the doors to get the zoo animals.
Oh.
And they chase each other around, and they jump in the top, and they try to come out the doors. But I almost always call that a zoo. I never play with it like the shapes order way.
Okay, well.
And the kids, the kids that can do the keys are so over the shape sorter stuff.
Right.
You know, they don't want to put those blocks in there, but boy, they love those darn keys that are those shapes, and they want to stick the key in the door and unlock the door. And I just think I can use it better if I've changed how I played with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I almost always call it the zoo and do zoo animals like that. But I'm, you know, and that's a vocabulary building thing too. And I'm usually, I use that on older kids that we're starting to do some articulation on, or kids that, you know, I'm thinking, okay, I've got to get some multisyllabic words here. And again, I know that might be too speechy to really talk about, or even anything that you might even, you know, target or work on. But I, you know, think about all those zoo words: giraffe, elephant, hippopotamus, rhinoceros. You know, those things, more advanced words that I'm just thinking, okay, can we sequence some syllables in a row? That's how I would use it. And I use it a lot for my apraxic kids that are, you know, have great receptive language and they're really starting to talk, but they still want to reduce every word down to one or two syllables. That's how I use that a lot. And boy, will kids stick with it because I love those darn keys.
Mm-hmm. Well, I usually use it as it's intended, and which I'm not, I mean, I'm serious, I do. And I have good luck with it. I will say a cautionary or a additional note. Initially, if they have no clue how to match them, I just point to where it is, and I may help them manipulate it. And, of course, I'm going to work on words like help and in, and
right.
I might get them to say whatever the shape is.
Yeah.
And the next step is, can they match them at all? And this is true whether we're with puzzles or you're working with shapes, shape sorters. If I see that it is a total random placement, and by that I mean they are just trying to shove it in every hole and they're not paying any attention to the shape or the corresponding color, I will cover all but like two holes.
Me too,
So they only have two choices, and it's not as frustrating. Because if you don't kind of limit their choices, they just tend to get really mad and give up.
And throw the keys across the room.
Yeah. So if you are actually working on that matching part and not the language part where Laura's using, and I love that idea, but if you're using it like the shape sorter, then limit the number of choices they have to choose from, and they'll stick with it longer and gradually just give them another choice and another choice until you see they really are matching it. But in the beginning, it's pretty random for most kids.
It is, but it is a way to kind of get an older kid to match because it's more fun than just sitting down looking at, you know, playing a memory game or something like that. You know, it is a more fun way to kind of work on that color matching. And matching colors, that comes on the test before matching picture shapes, right?
Right.
On the cognitive test, yeah.
Yeah, and to me it's a much bigger deal than name the colors, but.
Oh, yeah.
And that really, most of my kids, really what they want is the keys, because there is a, you know, universal fascination with keys, especially boys, but girls like them too.
I do.
Of course, I'm not going to let them have the keys until they've given some kind of effort to get the pieces in. Even if I've helped them, you know, I'm not going to make it too difficult, but I want them to, you know, complete some portion of it, and then I reward them with, now we can open it. And of course, they generally, most kids that I work with do need some help on that. So what? I give them a little help and we get them open. But that's the payoff. That's why, just like in the other shapes, or they like the noise, in this they really like the keys and the locks.
Right. It's a lot of fun. It's a good one. And I play with that all the time. I haven't played with that in a long time, though. I'm going to have to get that back out.
Now that we mentioned it. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, I think we're ready to move into your mainstay vocabulary building toys.
It is. I know. And these are more sit-down activities. And remember last week, our main point was you want to alternate when you're playing with your child, or certainly if you're a therapist, working with young children, you really want to alternate between sit-down activities and movement activities, especially if the child seems to crave a lot of movement, or especially if you've done a couple of these sit-down activities and you're losing them, get up and do one of those things that we talked about last week, one of those movement activities, and then sit back down and do another couple of sit-down activities. So just wanted to make that point again. Vocabulary building, and again, I call these vocabulary building because you can get a ton of words from these kinds of activities and use them in lots and lots of different ways. Potato heads, I almost never take the potato heads out of my car either. And so many therapists just get linked into just working on body parts with potato head or just saying the name of the body part. But, boy, I use it for comprehension. I use it, you know, when kids, if a kid really is into lots of little parts and pieces. I have a little girl on my caseload that's just turned 3, and I'm still seeing her, but she loves potato heads, but not when I pull one piece out. She likes for me to pour, you know, all 50 pieces out, and I really have to say, you know, let's find something that goes on her feet, you know, that's green, or, you know, when I give her those more challenging comprehension things, she loves that. Now, she's apraxic, so she really doesn't need that receptive thing, but, boy, that keeps her playing with me and really wanting to talk with me and do that, and it makes it just challenging enough that she wants to play. But you can do it with, of course, kids who aren't at that level yet either, and really having them imitate names of body parts and ask for different things and, you know, just use them, again, as more of a requesting activity.
I don't ever take mine out either. I have a big bin of all kinds of different, you know, many hats, many glasses, many different shoes.
Well, it's tons more fun when you can not just have the basic set, you know, buy lots of those. And, again, that's something you can always find at garage sales and secondhand stores and things like that, and you can get those pretty cheap. And just lump them all together and have, you know, have a big set of those to use. I do those all the time. They even have those little baby ones now. I don't have the baby ones anymore, but I used to. I don't know what happened to those either, but that's, you know, some kids like to make more than one of those in a sitting, but I usually just make one, and then we clean it all up and move on. Okay, Little Linguist is the next toy on here, and boy, I use this a lot. I probably use mine more than you use yours, don't you think?
Yeah, I've kind of been back into it lately. I go through fits and spurts with all toys, but this one I've kind of been using again lately.
Well, Little Linguist is a toy made by Neurosmith, and they were out of business for a while, but now I think they're back in business, but Little Linguist is no longer produced. So this is, again, an eBay toy, or if you can find it somewhere else. I know. Have you found it anywhere other than eBay or a secondhand store?
No.
Yeah, and it used to
went for a while.
Yeah, and I blow through these. I'm on my fourth or fifth one. And in the beginning, they were, $80 or something. They were really expensive, but of course now, since they're not made, you can get them cheaper than that. But it's a white disc. It's the only real electronic toy that I ever use and love. But it's a disc, and it has maybe 15 or 20, I don't know, maybe not that many items, and it's a car and a train and a plane and a boat, and then there's some animals, so you can get tons of good labeling from them from that activity. But you the object has a blue thing on the bottom. I'm having word finding problems today, Kate. You might have to jump in and explain this toy better. But you put it in the middle of the disc, and it says its name when you push the blue button, and then you push the red button, and it makes the sound. And kids like it a lot. So it's one that I use up all the time, or use all the time. And you can call or look it up on the Internet. It's called Little Linguist. It originally was a language learning toy, and so that you it came with several cartridges, like in English or Japanese or Spanish. And so the theory is your child would know the names in English already and then learn it in another language. But, of course, because we are working with language-delayed children, we only use the English cartridges.
I love Little Linguist, but I will say I don't know, I guess they went out of business. But it does malfunction a fair amount. Mine have.
It does. And, you know, they make the only other electronic toy that I really love is also made by Neurosmith, that, and it's not on this list, and you bought me that toy, the blocks, the music blocks. You, what's that called?
I call it music blocks. I don't know what the...
Well, it looks like a little rectangle, and it has openings in the top for you to place the blocks in, and when you put a block in, it plays part of a song, a classical-sounding song, and you can push the button and make it play the whole song once all the blocks, or it plays the music when the block is put in there, and some kids really like that.
Yeah, I have with lower functioning kids and kids on the spectrum, they seem to really like that. And I am as goofy as can be when the music goes off, and then again, it becomes more of a social toy than it is an isolated sit and play the music. And of course, I'm going to withhold the blocks until
until they say block or please or more.
That's right.
Yeah, and I do lots of dancing and silly stuff with that. With that toy too, and it does become social when they are looking at you to see what kind of crazy dancing you're going to do when that little tune is playing. And I do try to switch up how I dance, so it is kind of a big surprise when they look at me. You know, sometimes I'm doing like the monkey arms, and sometimes I'm just doing like a disco point thing. But I do think kids get into that, and they want to look at that to see what kind of crazy thing you're going to do, don't you?
Oh yeah, I mean I have them. Definitely anticipating. As soon as it goes, they're looking at me, and these are kids who don't necessarily readily look at you, but when you do that kind of stuff, they do. Mm-hmm.
They do. That's how they get their visual punch for the day. And then the last kind of toy under vocabulary building, and we didn't talk a lot about Little Linguists, but that's a great toy, and I think there are clips on the website in the DVD category that show me using Little Linguists. I think if you look at Teach Me to Talk, it's the clip about using sign language, and that I think that's the clip on there. I'm not sure. I think it is. But, again, Little Linguists is a great toy for vocabulary building, and we do it with expressive language or how they talk, and then also receptive language. You put all the ones out there and say, get the car, or show me the one that flies. Or, again, you can use it in that way. And then puzzles. We talked a lot about how to use puzzles last week, since we do make that kind of a movement activity. So we won't talk about that again, but I use puzzles all the time when kids have gotten to the point that they can kind of sit down and match. And sometimes with a kid, they'll go through a phase where they really love puzzles, and then they may be over it 3 or 4 months later, and I use it in the way that we talked about last week with the little puzzle relay races. But that's something that I think has a short lifespan with some kids too, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, so next week we will start talking about our favorite early pretend toys and then get through the games section. And I think we'll be about done with the toys we like. And then the week after that is when we'll start the series on using language in daily routines at home. Do you have any parting words?
Well, in my opinion, we're off the air, so I wanted to ask you.
Well, no. It's still recorded.
Well, no, I know. It's nothing
taboo.
Okay. You had on your list of toys on your website a Fisher-Price ball toy, and you said it's a bug?
Oh, yeah.
What is that?
It looks like a caterpillar, and I haven't played with it in a long time, and mine broke shortly, or I think it's broken shortly after I wrote this, but it's like a baby toy.
Okay, is it the one where the balls are on top and they kind of swirl around in one of the pieces?
No, it goes down the caterpillar's arms on the sides.
Oh,
it plays
so it's a stand-up kind of thing?
It's a stand-up kind of thing. It's not very tall.
Okay.
And it plays, the music is really cute. Kids will dance to the music while it comes down. And the ball can either go down one side or the other side, so I always get on one side. And the kid, I'll say, you get over here. And then I'll say, it's my ball. And then sometimes when it goes down their side, they think that's hysterical because I'll cry because it didn't go down my side. not mine, it's yours. And they just think that is so funny. But
yeah, I was looking it up because I thought, no, I've never even heard of this toy. So I tried looking it up on Google, and I guess I saw it, but I can't tell you what it's called. So it
looks like a caterpillar, but I call it a bug.
Okay, and it has kind of cuppy things on the side?
Yeah, and the balls fall down in it.
Okay.
on
and it's good,
side.
Huh? I've never had that. It looks good, though. You know I love these ball toys.
Yeah, and again, I use it for kids, you know, who love balls, and I'm thinking, okay, that's how I get them going every week, but darn it, you know, I've taken the same hammer toy in 5 weeks in a row. Could we switch it up a little bit?
Yeah.
And use that one? And I used it, it's old. It's several years old because I used it for a long time. And then last year when I was writing this article, saw it, you know, to write this, I took out all my toys and put them all in the dining room and kind of grouped them all by categories.
Oh.
And that was probably the last time I even used this toy.
So you mean you don't think, okay, I need a cause and effect toy. Okay, I need a...
Sometimes I'm that clinical, but sometimes I'm just thinking, okay, he can say ball and he likes balls and I've taken the same darn toys in. Let me come up with somebody else's ball.
The new ball toy. Yeah, I have never seen that in real life. I saw it online, and it does look like it's still made, and it's new. I mean, it's still for sale, not secondhand. So
it's cute, and I don't use it as much as I use ball and hammer toy, or I didn't, but I had a couple of kids that really like it. I mean, as I'm talking about it right now, I'm thinking, oh, how's Adam? Oh, how's Nick? You know, because they really loved it, and those were both little boys that were pretty visual. That ball was about the only thing they could say when we first started, and they both were really liked dancing, and they loved that sometimes I wouldn't get the ball because it went down their side. You know, that was the big that's my big gag with that toy. So yeah.
Okay, well that's for my information. I might have to consider that one.
Well, you know what you should do is just borrow mine and see if you like it. And then you could look for it. But I will have to dig it out for you to find it in one of my storage rooms. We won't even go there. We need to be done.
Yeah, you're being recorded. Strike that last line.
All
right. Well, good show. Talk to you later.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.